Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, our exclusive conversation with Republican gubernatorial nominee Vivek Ramaswamy as we enter the final 100 days until the November election. Also this morning in our ongoing crime prevention conversations, over the years, it's been proven that the National Night Out program is an important tool for increasing awareness of community policing programs and building bridges between officers and those they serve to protect. We'll get a preview of this year's Flag City Night Out. And in our community and business spotlight, how connection and community make Taylor Place Assisted Living unique among area senior facilities. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, July 27th, 2026. Back in the studio today. Good to be back in the friendly confines of the studio. It was wonderful to be out on the road on Friday for Stuff the Bus, but good to be back and hope you had a great weekend. How you feeling this morning? There is a new major study. Reveals that people worldwide now spend an average of 10.7 years of their life in poor health. In 1990, that was 8.8 years. We're getting sicker, apparently. The U.S. leads individual countries. We in America spend 14 years of our lives in poor health, according to this study. And in case you wondered, that figures out to be 17.8% of our expected lifespan we spend in poor health. I know, that's cheery, but it's a Monday, so this is the day to share these kinds of stories. Researchers tracked this gap across 204 countries from 1990 to 2023, and they found that the health gap widened in 203 of them. We've gone from 8.8 years in poor health to 10.7 overall globally. And in 203 of the 204 countries, that gap went up over the past 30 plus years. Wealthier nations showed the largest gaps as longer lifespans allow more time in poor health. The top maladies, the top things that we deal with in terms of poor health would be depression, anxiety, hearing loss, and lower back pain. those are the conditions that drive most unhealthy years, again, on a global basis. And women face a 12.1-year gap versus 9.3 years for men. Let's see here. And then they also go on to say that there are a number of modifiable factors that play into this as well. I mean, maybe you can't do anything about hearing loss. Well, you probably can, but you get the idea. Some of these things just come on naturally as we age, but there are some things that we can certainly do something about. And those would include high blood sugar, obesity, and tobacco use. The leading modifiable risk factors among wealthier nations, which the United States would certainly qualify as one of those. Just kind of interesting there. You're waking up feeling a little yucky. Something to think about. 17.8% of our expected lifespan we spend in poor health. That's not really what we wanted to hear. So will this be the week that ICE detentions and deportations will start? A federal appeals court late last week extended temporary protected status for Haitian immigrants in the U.S., which had been set to end on Friday, but that was extended through today. So they got a bit of a reprieve over the weekend. The court has blocked the Trump administration from ending legal residency for over 300,000 Haitian nationals in the U.S., through today, Monday. The move allows these individuals to be protected from deportation at least through the weekend, but now I don't know what will happen moving forward. TPS for Haitians was set to end on Friday following a Supreme Court ruling last month. So As we look ahead to the coming week, that may very well be one of the stories that is making headlines, unless that deadline is, and that protection is further extended. But as of right now, it ends today. Kind of interesting. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This I thought was kind of interesting, too. I saw this on the Ohio Newswire, the state newswire. The National Low Income Housing Coalition and other related agencies have issued a report saying that renters working full time need to make at least $23.82 an hour in order to be able to afford a two-bedroom apartment in Ohio. $23.82. Well, yeah, $23.82 is what you would need to make. Problem is, the national or the average hourly wage in Ohio is only $19.59. So, $4.23 less than what is needed to be able to afford rent. Average rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Ohio sits at $1,238, and there are plenty of places where it's even higher than that. But $1,238 is what they base that off of. $23.82 an hour is what workers need to make, and the average hourly wage, $19.59 in 2020. So a $4.23 gap in 2020, just 6 years ago, and right before the COVID pandemic hit, that gap between renter wage and housing wage was only $1.57. So still, people are not making enough to afford rent comfortably, even in 2020, but it has increased exponentially in just the past 6 years. Just kind of interesting. Again, as we talk about affordable housing and the cost of housing, certainly locally, it's worth putting some perspective on that. Thought it was an interesting report. Couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, here's some interesting health news. Researchers have made an unprecedented discovery in a lake that borders Vermont and the Canadian province of Quebec. So, lake right there on the border between the U.S. and Canada. And I don't even know the... I have the name here. I can't pronounce it. I'm not even going to try and embarrass myself. But this lake bordering Vermont and the Canadian province of Quebec, they have discovered a cancer that spreads between fish, like an infection between the fish in the lake. A cancer that spreads like an infection. Brown bullhead catfish have been developing black growths and melanomas for over a decade, and a new study indicates that the disease traces back to a single fish that shed cancer cells in the water. Those cells somehow escaped their host, lived in the environment somehow, and then attached themselves and infected a new host. And this is not the first time that this has happened necessarily. Dogs, some shellfish, and even Tasmanian devils are among the animals known to carry transmissible cancers. And now, catfish in this lake. I don't know what we make of that. Is that... Now, they are quick to point out that so far there is no evidence of any human infection. I don't know that it is being transferred to humans, but I'm not going swimming in that lake, I can tell you that. Researchers are searching for additional causes, and they are urging fishermen to avoid eating any tumor-covered fish. You don't have to tell me twice. I don't think... Yeah, but I'm not going swimming in that lake. Yeah, that's wild. That's why cancer is spreading like an infection. That's not what you want to hear on a Monday morning. There's your doom and gloom story. Every day there's got to be something out there that, Oh, we're all going to die. The world is coming to an end. Society is doomed. There's your doom and gloom story. Cancer that spreads like an infection. That's not good. That's good. And in the forecast, you're paying attention to the forecast. Looks like we're going to maybe get some more heat this week as the week goes on. Going to be more seasonable. This is the way they, everybody in the night saying, oh, it's going to be incredibly hot this week. They're saying that it's going to be more seasonable. You know, storms and higher humidity and, you know, all of that. They're really getting scorched in parts of the central plains. So I don't know if that's going to make its way, that heat dome is going to make its way to us and bring us more, still more 90 degree temperatures and all of that. Really, but if it does, here's something that may help. A Japanese company has introduced the Duhaimen box. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right either, but it is a human-sized cooling unit designed to combat rising summer temperatures. It is roughly the size of a standard vending machine. It is a device that you climb into. It fits one person at a time and maintains an internal temperature of 59 degrees. So it's like a vending machine for air conditioning. If you're really hot, if it's hot outside, you can't, I guess, get indoors permanently into the air conditioning. They're marketing this as a device for outdoor workplaces like construction sites, where there's really not a building that the construction workers can go into and cool off. And so they have this machine, and I don't know, you know, how much they charge for, you know, a minute of cooling or whatever. But you walk into the machine, close the door, and it maintains an internal temperature of 59 degrees. With cool air directed at the head, neck, and shoulders, and your back, and so you can cool off there. But I can see, like at construction sites and other outdoor workplaces, how that would be very beneficial. Yeah, so, pretty wild though. All right, there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, showers and storms possible, a high in the upper 80s. Showers and storms tonight, low around 70. Ohio's Attorney General has announced that a man's been indicted in connection with a crash that killed an Ohio State Highway Patrol trooper and seriously injured another driver.
OSHP trooper Nicholas Caton was killed in October of last year when he was struck by a semi-truck while assisting a tractor trailer on the side of the road in Canfield. Wilson announced an indictment against 36-year-old Ryan Raich for the death of trooper Caton. He is charged with aggravated vehicular homicide and vehicular manslaughter.
ONN's Brissa Bradfield reporting. There are four new faces on the Finley Fire Department. They are Hunter Klaus, Dominic Tracy, Zachary Hammond, and Gavin Lammers. The four were recently sworn in by Mayor Christina Mern. See a picture of all four along with the mayor and fire chief Josh Eberle in this story on our website. The United Way of Hancock County is kicking off its 2026 annual campaign with a community pickleball tournament. The United Way says 100% of each team's registration fee for the tournament will go directly toward United Way-funded programming that serves 1 in 4 people in Hancock County. The United Way of Hancock County's 2026 annual campaign runs through November 20th, with additional events planned and opportunities for workplace and individual giving. This year's campaign goal is $1.9 million, with all money raised staying in Hancock County. Get more details about the United Way's campaign in general and the pickleball tournament specifically in this story on our website. Ohio's back-to-school sales tax holiday is coming up. It'll be held August 7th, 8th, and 9th. See the list of items that qualify for the sales tax holiday in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com. Matt Demchek for 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Well, a little less than 6 months from now, our next guest hopes to be taking up residence at 358 North Parkview Avenue. That's the address of the Ohio Governor's Mansion, in case you didn't know. Recent history suggests he has a pretty good chance of that as Republican gubernatorial nominee. Vivek Ramaswamy, thanks very much for taking the time today. We appreciate it.
Great to be on. How you doing?
Doing very well. Prior to your run for president a couple of years ago, not many people knew who Vivek Ramaswamy was. I would imagine there are probably a fair number of people who wouldn't have even been able to pronounce Vivek Ramaswamy if they saw it printed. What did you learn from that campaign? What was the biggest takeaway?
Look, I think it was the experience of a lifetime. I became the youngest person in the history of the Republican Party to run for U.S. president. But I also learned that a lot of what we can do for the country and a lot of what I ran on for president is actually better accomplished by a governor. Think about improving the quality of education, driving economic growth, increasing wages. There's a lot a president can do in those domains, but there's in some of those domains, even more a governor can do. And it's really what led me at the end of that race, of course, to endorse President Trump. And I'm proud to receive his endorsement as well for governor of Ohio. But now to embark on this new journey to make Ohio the top state in the country to raise a young family and to give our kids the world-class education that I think is the birthright of every Ohioan. And I'm excited to do it.
And it's kind of interesting you say that, because for some people, they might look at this and say, after this run for president, again, a couple of years ago, running for governor would almost seem like something of a consolation prize.
I think that would be incorrect. To the contrary, I have an opportunity to reshape the very state where I was born and raised for the better. In fact, I'll tell you why I'm running. And I think a lot of people go into politics because maybe they want to make more money afterwards as a lobbyist or for fame or fortune. For me, I don't, thankfully, need any more money. We've been successful through business in my life and lived the American dream to a full extent. And I'm not looking for fame. There's better ways to acquire that. To your point, I already ran for president, right?
Yeah.
So my sole motivation in running for governor is really, my faith teaches me we have a moral duty to leave this place better than we found it and to use the blessings we have been given to do that. And this country and our state has given me more than our family could have ever dreamed of when I was growing up in a middle-class family in Cincinnati, Ohio, when my dad worked at the GE plant off I-75, facing down Jack Welch's layoffs, when my mom was treating patients in nursing homes and at the VA. When I went to public schools through eighth grade before going to St. X, I would have never imagined that I would have been able to found multi-billion dollar companies, now, God willing, in a position to lead the very state where I was born and raised. That story is only possible in the greatest country known to the history of mankind. It's the United States of America. And that's why I'm running, because I believe it is my moral duty to lead this state. And I'll add one more thing to that, which is that unlike maybe a lot of people going to politics, my life isn't going to be better or more comfortable if I win this. It's going to be the opposite, okay? I'm doing this out of a sense of moral duty, and I do believe if there was somebody else in this state better positioned to lead Ohio to economic greatness, to bring economic growth to our state, I'd be backing them instead. I'm doing this because I believe I'm the one person in this state who knows how to deliver lower costs, bigger paychecks, better schools quickly with a business background that I think we need to put to use in leading our state.
You mentioned your business background. You have certainly made a name for yourself politically as one of those advocates for a corporate approach to governance, running government like a business. And certainly no one can question your business savvy. In fact, I read a headline the other day about how Ramaswamy hopes to be Ohio's first billionaire governor. But to many people, especially these days, the word billionaire translates to out of touch. How do you reassure voters who would be inclined to support you but worry that they will end up regretting a vote for someone who is out of touch with the average middle-class Ohioan?
Yeah, look, here's what I would say is I was not born a billionaire. I was not born a millionaire. I was not born an anything heir. Okay, I was born an heir to nothing. I went to public schools through eighth grade because private schools were not on the table. My parents didn't have external childcare. They were two hardworking parents trying to make ends meet. with my brother and I, trying to raise us and instill in us the right values. And we raise our kids today as a parent of three young kids right now in the same circumstances. My wife works saving lives every day in the cancer hospital at Ohio State, not for money or for wealth, but because that's our moral calling to service. And so it's because I've lived in different economic circumstances, right? I didn't always grow up in the circumstances I live today. It's been a story of upward economic mobility, coming from nothing, working hard, getting a great education and different kinds of education, first through public schools, then to a Catholic high school. Mm-hmm. That's really what gives me, I think, the different perspectives that will make me more successful in leading Ohio. And I understand that a lot of families are facing economic challenges. And I think nobody in this state knows how better to actually deliver solutions to those than someone who has built businesses, who's employed many people, who has created value to bring that value, that employment, those high-paying jobs to the state where I was born and raised. I know how to do it. And I think that would be a legitimate critique, by the way, of somebody who maybe was born into wealth and had never lived differently. And I don't want to talk too much about my opponent, but you know, she picked someone as her right-hand man, as a lieutenant governor, who was born to the son of a Fortune 500 CEO, who was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And the irony to me to hear our political opponents criticize a self-made success and American dream story while actually resorting to special interest lobbyists who have been born into great wealth on the other side while criticizing true wealth creators, I think tells you all you need to know about the two parties in this race in Ohio. I don't want to whine. I want to win for Ohio. Okay. And I want to use that economic success that I've had to bring economic success to every family in the state.
To the point of having built a successful business, you have faced some criticism for the fact that you moved your business out of Ohio to Texas a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, let's get the facts straight first. All right, so that is a opposition talking point. The truth is, I set up that business here in Ohio for as long as I let it as its executive chairman. I stepped down from that business to run for president, to enter public life, to really make a contribution. Years later, what happened was the new CEO who I recruited to Ohio had to make a separate decision when they merged with the company in Texas where the headquarters would be. And he chose Texas. And you know what? I didn't love that. In fact, it really bothered me. And it motivated me to say, you know what? I wasn't so much mad at him as I was mad at the fact that Texas was in some ways more competitive than Ohio in its tax rate, in its regulatory environment. And so I said, you know what? That's part of what led me on this mission and my moral duty to make Ohio the state that's the best state to do business. And that's something that I know I can achieve. It's true. Too often, you have many people leaving for places like Florida and Tennessee and Texas, which have zero income tax rates. And you know what? My family, we'd pay lower income taxes if we lived there too. But I didn't choose to leave. I choose to stay in the state where I was born and raised. And I think that that's important to have a leader who understands how these decisions are made and can actually ensure that more of those businesses and more of those families and more of those young people too, by the way, stay in Ohio. And I think we should talk more about how we're going to create those opportunities. In this campaign, in politics anymore, we don't talk enough about the actual solutions that we need to deliver. And the good news in my campaign is we've identified exactly what we need to do through workforce development, through taking our income tax rate down to zero where it belongs, reducing property tax burdens, reducing electric bills, which have gotten too high, by producing more energy in Ohio, cutting red tape that gets in the way of new housing to make housing more affordable for our young people by increasing the supply of new home construction. See, these are the tangible, practical solutions that I'm running on. And I do think it's going to take a businessman who actually has built and created real value as an entrepreneur to deliver those solutions rather than a bureaucrat who shut down our economy during COVID, which was something that actually chased a lot of people out of Ohio. We don't want to repeat those mistakes, and that's the way I'm going to lead.
As we said, based on recent election cycles, one might anticipate that you would have a commanding lead in this race as the Republican candidate, given that Ohio has been reliably red for the past 20 years or so. But the polls right now show this as a toss-up or at a minimum within the margin of error. Does that concern you at all?
Not at all. And by the way, if you look at that recent history, look at where those polls were in 2018, in 2022, in 2024, it was the same story, right? And the results were the same in each of those cases, which is that Ohio in those years has been a Republican state, as I believe we will be this cycle as well. That being said, I'm not taking anything for granted. I'm going to all 88 counties of this state multiple times over. I think we've been to all 88 counties more times than my opponent certainly has. And we're going to continue to do that. And we're going to continue to do that by listening to Ohioans across the state, not just in Columbus, not just in the big cities, but in Findlay, where I was very recently, as you well know, in Dayton, where I was immediately after, from Appalachia to Toledo to the Mahoning Valley. We are stopping at nothing. My family and I, with young kids, who were doing this at really full speed and full tilt, going to every county, every community in this state, including some places where traditional Republicans don't go, in the inner cities, to meet with Black communities, to meet with really the kind of communities that historically may have gone for Democrats, to explain to them why there's a better way for their families to live with lower costs, to live a more affordable life, with higher wages, with better schools for their kids. That's what the state needs, and I know we can deliver it, and I'm confident that if every person in this state votes for the candidate who they believe is more likely to bring high-paying jobs to Ohio and to their families, I'm confident we will win this in a decisive victory in November.
Ohio Republican gubernatorial nominee Vivek Ramaswamy is with us this morning. Thank you very much for taking your time for us today, and have to wish you a happy early birthday. I had to get that in because you and I share the same birthday on August 9th. So get
oh,
that
is that right? Well, you too, my friend. Happy birthday in advance. That's great.
Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Take care. All right. Thank you.
Over the years, it has been proven that the National Night Out is an important tool for increasing awareness of community policing programs and building bridges between officers and those they serve and protect. And in Findlay, the Flag City Night Out is coming up here next week. Brian White is with us, crime prevention officer from the Findlay Police Department, with all the details. That really is the idea behind this whole thing. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a great night out with the community, meeting all of the kids, but there is a serious purpose behind it.
Yes. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me today. Yeah, so the sole purpose of Flag City Night Out is to get the community engaged with first responders, not just police, but also fire, EMS, all the people that come out and help us when we need help, right? And when we talk about especially kids, a lot of times when they are interacting with law enforcement, it's usually because we're on a call, and a lot of times those are not good interactions.
Right.
So we like to set up an environment that's fun for everyone. It's a great opportunity for the public to kind of come out and, you know, just hang out with us. And it also allows opportunity for them to learn about what we do and also ask any questions that they might have.
Yeah. And not just for the kids, but also for the grownups, for the parents to, you know, get information, like we said, community policing programs, you know, raise any, ask any questions, raise any issues, concerns that they may have, that kind of thing. So this is a terrific opportunity for law enforcement to really connect in a rather unique way with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's actually kind of funny. Whenever we host these events, a lot of times it's more the parents that enjoy checking out our equipment or asking questions or, hey, I want to sit in the back of a police car because hopefully I'll never be here again, right?
Right.
Kind of one of those deals. And one of the things that I really wanted to encourage when I took over this program a long time ago was a community resource fair, right? So area nonprofits, they come out and they provide information about what they do in the community to those that are most likely in a situation to utilize those services. So that is a component of our event. And every year it seems to grow a little bit bigger. We get more area organizations that come out and, again, provide just information about what they do.
So give us all of the details on this. It is happening next Tuesday, right? Weather permitting. Right now it looks pretty good, but there's a lot can happen between now and then, but the plan is for next Tuesday. Give us all of the details here.
Yeah. So Flag City Night Out, or I should say National Night Out, the national program is held on the first Tuesday of August every single year. So it's always kind of the same date, but our event will take place at Riverside Park near the volleyball courts, starting at 6 o'clock, and that goes till 9. We have free food, so pizza, hot dogs, all the good stuff, chips, pop, water, you know, all that stuff. A few organizations also come out to help us, like Movement Church. They provide root beer floats for everyone. So Kona Ice will be there as well, providing, and this is 100% free. That is one of the things that we wanted to do, is make sure this was kept as a free event to the community, thanks mm-hmm. to donations from the public. And so free food, music, entertainment. We have our annual mascot games, where area mascots compete in our version of the Olympics, right? Musical chairs and things like that. It's always a good time. And we also do a lot of live demonstrations. The public really seems to enjoy these. For instance, the police dogs. We have a canine demonstration where our canines are brought out to the public and kind of shown what they can do, right? So apprehension, narcotics detection, things like that. We also have some drones that we put up in the air. We explain to the public why we utilize these things, how we use them. And also something we introduced a couple years ago, which has gone over very well, was our less lethal tools demonstration. So for instance, our taser, our less lethal shotgun, we show these to the public and explain how they work and explain why we would utilize these items, because a lot of times they kind of look like scary devices to most people, but we can actually explain how these are used as a de-escalation tool rather than turning things into a more forceful contact.
Mm-hmm. Again, as you mentioned, it is all free for the community to come out and have some fun, meet the officers, engage in that dialogue. Over the years, can you point to, like we said, this is a terrific opportunity to emphasize the community policing programs and make those connections and so on. Have you seen that evolve out of the night out events in the past, where you've had some success in neighborhoods that maybe have been, you know, points of emphasis, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, me in my crime prevention role, I am always kind of out in the public, so I see a lot of familiar faces all the time. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that struck me 1 year was we have our police versus fire games, where we have area kids pair up with an officer and a firefighter. And one of the things is usually a three-legged race, right? And I remember being out and about with another officer, and a kid comes up and says to the other officer, right, "Hey, you were my partner in the three-legged race," right? And that's really kind of the connections that we talk about, right? This event served to facilitate that connection with this child. And now this child remembers this officer, and if they are in trouble, that's who they're going to think of.
Yeah. Right?
Same way the SRO, school resource officer programs, work in schools, right? Mm-hmm. Because these kids make connections with these officers, and otherwise it might just be a scary figure to them. Now they're an actual face and something beyond the badge.
Yeah. So again, this pays dividends well beyond just the one night event that is happening next Tuesday. And I don't think we can emphasize that enough, because really at the end of the day, it's about creating a safer community for everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. One, providing information, right? That way, a lot of times people, they're a little worried about contacting police because they don't know what to expect. But now here we're in a very lighthearted environment where they can bring up whatever it is they want to talk about, just right. In a very nonchalant way. Same idea behind coffee with a cop, mm-hmm. right? But also they get to see the tools that we utilize, explain how we use some of the stuff. It kind of takes, it kind of pulls back the curtain a little bit, right? Behind some of the stuff that a lot of people don't really know about. And again, just spending that time talking with someone, it facilitates that friendship, that relationship that mm-hmm. again, like you mentioned, pays dividends later on.
And in the process, you may learn about something that needs attention from the law enforcement community. So obviously paying dividends in that way as well. Again, next Tuesday. And if there is a weather issue, there is a contingency plan for this, right?
Yeah, we've actually had to do this before. Hopefully it won't be this year, but in the case of severe thunderstorms or something, we will change the date to the following Tuesday, which would be August 11th.
Okay.
And that will come out that morning next Tuesday. So, if it turns out that we need to change it.
Yeah, hopefully, cross our fingers, we won't have to worry about that. But if the weather looks iffy, then monitor the socials and we'll have that information as well. But it all starts when?
Yeah, 6 o'clock on Tuesday, August 4th at Riverside Park.
All right. And again, it is all absolutely free. So definitely
want to leave the wallet at home. Leave the wallet at home, come out and have some fun.
Swing out and have a good time with the local law enforcement at the Flag City Night Out event. Again, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning. Brian, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
A young man in Jonesboro, Arkansas has gone viral after he was caught on camera helping a stranger in a wheelchair cross the street. It's a very kind thing to do, but the circumstances were a bit unusual. Christopher Hellenthal, who was dressed as Spider-Man, jumped out of a red SUV and rushed to the aid of a man in a wheelchair who was about to get caught in the intersection as the light turned green. As for the reason behind the superhero outfit, Mr. Hellenthal said he was on his way to work. He works at a trampoline park where he portrays the web slinger and entertains the kids. And so he was in his Spider-Man costume and, like a true superhero, jumped out to help this guy cross the street. When he noticed the guy at the intersection, he said he didn't hesitate to help. "I've always loved Spider-Man," he said, adding, "like Peter Parker's Aunt May says, there's a hero in all of us." The video was caught by a traffic camera at the intersection, and it was just funny to see Spider-Man jump out of the car and help the guy across the street. Very sweet. Kudos to Christopher Hellenthal, Jonesboro, Arkansas. Elsewhere in the broken news, this from Wilmington, Illinois, where a maintenance worker found himself trapped in a 130-foot-tall gas station sign last week. 130 feet in the air, he was trapped in the sign after his lift malfunctioned. AJ Gow was doing some repair work on Tuesday on the towering sign, which is located off of Interstate 55 along Lorenzo Road in Wilmington. When it came time to get back down out of the sign, the telescopic boom lift that he used to get up there malfunctioned. And so he was trapped. Additionally, the sign pole had no stairs or ladders built into it, meaning that he couldn't get down that way either. Eventually, the Wilmington Fire Department was called, but none of their trucks have ladders that extend more than 100 feet in the air, which meant that Mr. Gow was still 30 feet out of reach. It's not like he could jump. Eventually, fire officials located another boom lift in the Joliet area, which is roughly 20 miles north of the rest stop where the sign is located. The lift was brought in to the sign with an Illinois State Police escort. After more than 6 hours trapped in the sign, he was eventually lowered to the ground and was transported to the hospital to be treated for nausea. He said the sign kept swaying in the wind, so he had a case of nausea and dehydration because it was very hot. Wow. That's a bad day at work right there. That's a bad day at work. No matter how bad your day is today at work, if you're not trapped in a sign 130 feet in the air waiting to be rescued for 6 hours. Could be a lot worse. So count your lucky stars. And finally, in the broken news out of Gold Hill, Colorado, man was pretty annoyed at his neighbor recently after hearing his car honking all night, kept him from getting any sleep. But when he woke up the next morning and looked out the window, he was ready to yell at his neighbor. Turned out that it wasn't his crazy neighbor after all. A bear had somehow gotten into the car and locked himself inside. And that was the honking. The bear was honking the horn. Let me out. In a video posted online, you can see the man approach the vehicle where the bear is hanging out in the front seat, looking pretty defeated and seemingly just hoping for someone to free him. The man can be seen tying one end of a rope to the car door and then walking a good 40, 50 feet away before pulling the rope, opening the door, and letting the bear out. He's so ready to yell at his neighbor for keeping him awake all night. It turns out it was a bear in the car. Wow. I explained that to your insurance company. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
You're invited to the Night Jazz Concert to benefit Flag City Honor Flight Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 till 7:30 at 50 North, located at 339 East Melrose in Findlay. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted. Come out for food, raffles, music, and fun Sunday, August 2nd from 4:30 to 7:30 at 50 North as Night Jazz performs to benefit Flag City Honor Flight. Doors open at 3:30. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives as we're getting up, getting ready to start a new week. A new poll of 2,000 adults finds that 83% of us follow a very strict morning routine. 83% of us have a very strict morning routine. Over 42% prefer morning showers. As opposed to showering at night before you go to bed. 42% prefer a shower in the morning. 34% rise immediately at their first alarm. Moment the alarm goes off, you get a 26% hit the snooze button at least once. I was surprised that number was not much, much higher. I mean, the snooze button is my best friend in the morning. Just ask my wife. It's like I get up way before she does, and I'm constantly hitting the snooze button. Just get up already. 20% will spend several minutes sitting on the edge of the bed processing reality before finally getting up. Nearly half will check their phones within 5 minutes of waking up. Do you do that? 45% brush their teeth before breakfast, 45% after. So it's kind of a almost half and half. 49% say they struggle to sleep unless they are on their preferred side of the bed. And 65% said that their nighttime habits directly affect how they feel the next morning. And the vast majority of that 83% that have a specific morning routine say that if they don't follow that exactly, it ruins their entire day.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Putting Taylor Place Assisted Living in the spotlight this morning, and Vanessa Ridgway is with us today. Talk a little bit about Taylor Place for those who are not familiar, maybe have never been there and you know, seen what it is that you do, because the whole idea of senior living is very different than maybe what it used to be or what people have in their mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So senior living today has really evolved. And at Taylor Place, you can see the difference right away. It's no longer just about providing care. It's about creating the warm, engaging lifestyle where people feel supported, connected, and truly at home. At Taylor Place, we're a smaller, more intimate community, which really allows us to get to know each resident on a personal level. So we focus on individualized care, offering 24-hour support and nursing service, while still encouraging independence and dignity in everyday life. You know, what makes it special is the sense of community. People aren't just living here. They're building relationships, participating in activities that they enjoy, and sharing meaningful moments together. Families are also a big part of what we do. We work closely with all the families to ensure their loved one is thriving. We also place a strong emphasis on safety and peace of mind with a secure environment and a team that's always there when needed. So at the end of the day, Taylor Place is about enhancing the quality of life, helping people stay active, engaged, and supported in a place they're proud to call home.
And I think these are all of the things that we would hope. These are all of the things that, you know, we would hope to check off all of those boxes when we are considering this for our loved ones. And you touched on this, but I want to have you expand on it a little bit about what makes Taylor Place different than other care communities, because there are a lot of places that may talk about the same sort of talking points that you were just mentioning.
Yeah, what makes Taylor Place different? It's the feeling when you walk through the door. It truly feels like home. Again, Taylor Place is a 39 apartment community, which allows us to provide much more personal relationship-based approach to care. Our team takes the time to really get to know each resident, their routines, their preferences, and what brings them joy. This means that care isn't one size fits all. It's tailored to each individual while still promoting independence and dignity. We also offer 24-hour support, nursing services, and a secure environment so families have peace of mind, knowing that their loved one is safe and well cared for. But beyond that, it's the sense of connection that sets us apart. Residents build meaningful relationships with each other and staff, and families are truly a part of the community. So at Taylor Place, it's not just about meeting needs. It's about creating a place where people feel valued, engaged, and genuinely at home every single day.
Trying to go above and beyond, just the expected, I think, is absolutely. Is really what it boils down to. And I want you to go back and mention this. You were talking about this before, and it really kind of piqued my interest. You talk about social connection and community. It's not just a place where people go to live, that it actually is a community. So talk about that role and how that impacts, obviously the experience, the happiness that somebody will have, but also their overall health.
Yeah, so social connection and a strong sense of community play a huge role in a resident's overall health and happiness, just as much as the care we provide. So at Taylor Place, we see every day how meaningful relationships can improve not only someone's mood, but also their physical and cognitive well-being. When residents are engaged, whether it's sharing meals, participating in activities, or simply having conversations, they're more active, more alert, and feel a greater sense of purpose. Loneliness and isolation can have a real impact on someone's health, especially for older adults. That's why we focus so much on creating opportunities for connection. In our smaller, close-knit community, our residents build genuine friendships with one another and our team. So they're not just cared for, they're known, valued, and included. Our families play a really important role in that. We encourage their involvement and their partnership, which helps the residents feel supported from all sides. And at the end of the day, it's those interactions, shared experiences, and sense of belonging that truly enhance the quality of life. It's what turns a place to live into a place where people can truly thrive.
Yeah, the key words that you mentioned there, friendships and purpose. I mean, who doesn't want to make sure that their life has purpose? And I think that's so important. If folks are interested in learning more, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so you can give us a call at 419-420-0790 or just stop by and visit 1920 Breckenridge Road right here in Findlay.
Taylor Place Assisted Living in the spotlight this morning, and Vanessa Ridgeway with us. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to reach out to us directly via email if there's something you want to share that way. And also, if you are a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for that. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.